think we're ready to go.
Excellent. Hello, I'm Simon Mercep, and this is Crave, the podcast dedicated to music, movies, and anything else that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
Now this week, James Bond is currently on hiatus. We don't know for certain who's going to be directing the next one, or indeed who's going to be playing the next James Bond. But to fill the time, we've got another representation of British intelligence. This time, Johnny English is back, the third cinematic outing from Rowan Atkinson. Obviously with Rowan Atkinson, it's a comedy, I suppose.
It's meant to be.
Yeah.
Steve and I have also caught another film which with a strong comedic element to it, and also a film which fairly and squarely sits as, a mystery thriller, really. It's called A Simple Favour. And I think that Mr. McCabe and I may not necessarily see eye to eye on this one, so we could have a good chat here.
Yeah, we've also got an Australian film called Ladies in Black, which is a gentle little thing, isn't it, really? Period piece from the 1950s, set in a department store in Sydney.
Ooh, now I haven't seen this one, so I'm looking forward to hearing what Steve's got to tell us about that one. Staying in Australia, we are talking about music this week. We'll hear from a Brisbane songwriter and vocalist called Kim Benzie, and he is frontman for a rock band called Dead Letter Circus. I haven't heard of them before, I've got to say. The interview, I have to tell you, does get a little salty here and there, but, you know, this is a podcast. I think that's okay. Let's just say Kim has some interesting tales to tell.
Why not?
Yes.
Why not? Well, should we start with some comedy from the cinema, some Johnny English? It's been in the cinema for a few days now. Here's the thing, right? I saw the first two Johnny English films from about 10 years ago, and I thought that they were very, very poor. Mm-hmm. But I saw the trailer for this new one, and I thought, well, maybe, just maybe, they've pulled it together. Yeah.
And? I don't think you need to say any more.
Did my tone convey what it was meant to convey there?
I felt the pause said it all, Steve.
Outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding. I was hoping it might.
Yeah, so anyway, for the sake of, I have to agree with you, for the sake of just setting the scene, let me just briefly tell you a little bit about the plot, not that the plot is that important, mind you. But anyway, our Johnny English, getting on in years, is plucked from a job teaching school kids how to be spies, and he's brought back into the fold of MI7 because all the other agents have been outed, and his task at the behest of the British Prime Minister, played by Emma Thompson, is to get to the bottom of an attack on Britain's cyber security. Alongside him, he has his sidekick from the earlier films, who he calls Boff, that's played by Ben Miller, he meets a sexy Russian spy called Ophelia, played by Olga Kurylenko, and the villain is an American called Jason, played by Jake Lacey, and that's probably all the plot we need. Suffice it to say, it obviously draws extremely heavily for its imagery and its references, even its music, on James Bond. It's a complete James Bond parody. It's a parody as well. It's a parody as well, isn't it, Steve?
In some ways, yes.
I think you've said it very well, Steve. If you've seen the other ones, you're not really seeing anything new here. It was overall, I thought, flat and disappointing. I concede I did laugh sometimes, and in my written review on the cravepodcast.com website, I mentioned one or two times when I did have a giggle, but overall I didn't, sadly. How about you?
About the same. I mean, there's the occasional moment where it raises a smile. You've got Rowan Atkinson doing a bit of the physical comedy that he does like nobody else in the world can do, and that's nice, but that's not enough to sustain the film, in my opinion. You've got this basically the same setup that you had in the first film. All the other agents are unavailable for a contrived reason, and therefore MI7 scrape the bottom of the barrel and wind up with Johnny English as the only available agent. So we've seen that setup before. There is the flimsiest of stories about someone hacking into British computer systems and holding the country to ransom. And it's a very, very thin little thing. You've got gags that are telegraphed so obviously that at one point, I went to see this with our intrepid guest reviewer, Debbie, and at one point I turned to her and said, I wonder how long it's going to take before that comes back to bite him.
Yes.
Every single gag with very, very, I think, no exception, all of the big set piece gags were telegraphed so blatantly that there was no real humour in them. You've got Rowan Atkinson doing what he does best, but the thing is, when he does it best, he's got something to support it. So when he's doing the physical comedy, he's got the stories of Mr. Bean. When he's doing the world weary thing, he's got the writing of Ben Elton in a Blackadder. He had none of that to support him in this, and as a result, the thing just felt, it just was dull.
It was quite dull. Just for the sake of giving a bit of light and shade to what we're talking about, I'll mention one or two things that, you know, did interest me a little bit. There's an opening sequence where he is in this classroom, and there are one or two nice little touches when he's dealing with these younger kids. I thought that was all right. And then there's also relatively early on, there's a little sequence where he meets some other older spies, and all of up pop three, you know, genuine English acting lords, probably Charles Dance, Edward Fox and Michael Gambon. And I thought, oh, that's a nice touch, a bit of quality in the ranks, you know.
And it does make you think, doesn't it, when they've got that kind of heavyweight lineup so early on for doing basically a cameo.
Yes.
You think if they can pull this off, wow, this is going to be a treat, isn't it?
Yes, I think that was unfair because it raised expectations too much.
This is very true,
And it didn't really, unfortunately, that wasn't sustained. There was, in fact, I was a bit disappointed in Emma Thompson, who I usually think is excellent, but I think she overplayed her role for the sake of trying to reach for some comedic effect
I think basically she was trying to find a role.
They
didn't give her a whole lot to work with, did they,
fair? No. But, you know, I want to mention just, we're just kicking the boot in here, but the thing that really struck me, Steve, about this, and this was... percolating away in the back of my mind as I was watching this film, about why it wasn't really connecting with me and why the gags, the visual gags, I really felt, there was the odd laugh in here and there, but, you know, they felt like I'd seen it all before. And the answer is I had seen it all before, and I didn't have to think back too far to, well, actually, I tell a lie because I'm getting on a bit now, so I'm going back away to my teenage years when I watched a certain British wonderfully, maybe one of the best ever comic actors anywhere in the world, called Peter Sellers.
Yes.
Delight audiences with his Pink Panther films, playing the French bumbling detective Inspector Clouseau. And essentially I realized that Johnny English really is doing what Clouseau did three decades ago. You know, a crime fighter who is a incompetent, bumbling, full of himself fool, who only manages to win by chance. He's, you know, he's caught up in his own delusions of how clever and witty he is when he's not.
Yes.
And there's a lot of physical humor to both what Clouseau and Johnny English do. And I realized that, that's the problem. I was a big fan of Peter Sellers as a young lad, and I continue to really be in awe of his talent. And as good as Rowan Atkinson can be, and you rightly talk about his roles in Blackadder and perhaps, you know, Bean, or certainly the early Bean, if you're thinking about Sellers, he pales in comparison. And I got to that point when I was watching the film, and then it really fell flat after that.
Yes.
And that was about as far as I could take it, really. So.
No, I think that's all very fair.
Yeah. So I'm not going to really have. I struggle to recommend this, I have to say, Steve.
Well, I'm kind of the same myself, but oddly enough, as Debbie and I walked out of the cinema here in Pukekohe, and we were walking home afterwards, she was remarking that she actually thought it was really quite sweet, and I said, okay, like, you're really going to have to justify that one for me, because I'm not with you in the slightest. And she was saying, and to be fair, I think she's setting the bar a bit low here. She thought it was a very, very good-natured film. And I can see what she's saying there. That, you know, there certainly among a lot of British TV sitcoms lately, the tendency has been make it barbed, make it nasty, make it edgy. Characters aren't particularly likable. And one thing you have to say for this film is it you can't not like it. I mean, you might not be impressed by it, but you're not going to take against it. You're not going to be offended by it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It is. Although some of the humour is a little physically outrageous and silly, it's not. Yeah, that's true. I can't disagree with that. It's not a. It didn't make me feel aggressively anti it. It was just that it was a bit flat. It was flat, and I wasn't laughing very much. But I think Debbie. I couldn't probably disagree with Debbie. It still would leave me struggling to strongly recommend it. I can't recommend it very strongly. I mean, I think it's diverting enough, I suppose, and it's not going to upset you. You might have the odd laugh here and there. I don't think it's a comedy that would stay long in your memory, probably. But it's that's true. It's not offensive, really. So that's a good perspective on it.
Yeah, I do find myself wondering, though, what happened at the pitch meeting when somebody said, you know what the world really needs right now? Mm. More than anything else, what we need is another Johnny English film.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Because there's not that much new. I mean, the idea that he's a bit of a dinosaur secret agent trying to struggle in the new modern technical world is not new. In fact, I think even the James Bond movie, the last one, Spectre, was all about that too. And as you said, Steve, that's what the Johnny English films have been about from day one. So the premise of it hasn't changed.
No, not at all. So why someone decided they needed this? And yeah, they are blatantly, unashamedly, there's no pretense of it, they are James Bond rip-offs. I mean, they're meant to be. They're clearly James Bond spoofs.
Yes.
And they wear it quite unashamedly. So you mentioned the music before, and you do get the sort of the big swirling
absolutely
Monty Norman strings going through
it. That's true. You'd have to say that the Olga Kurylenko is the Bond girl here, obviously.
Absolutely. You know, there's even, you know, some of the aliases they give themselves hint back to classic James Bond films. It's very, very, it's meant to wear its Bond references on its sleeve, but it doesn't go anywhere with them, and that's what I find galling. Like I say, I mean, Atkinson is better, but he needs better material. You can't just say, go and do your Mr. Bean thing and it'll be funny, because we've seen it too many times. It needs a context, and this wasn't it for my money.
Maybe, Steve.
Go on.
Maybe.
Go on.
Because the actual James Bond film has delayed, because they lost a director, Danny Boyle, and they've had to get another one, and it's been pushed back, I think, at least six months. Maybe they thought, oh my God, the world needs something. Let's give them Johnny English.
You know,
I don't know. There has to be some reason. Anyway.
Incidentally, I did hear a headline a while recently. Somebody gave me the headline because of the family who own the James Bond franchise.
Yeah.
Decided that they didn't want to work with Danny any longer. And so the headline that somebody came up with was, Broccoli's Gone Off the Boil. Which I thought, that's it, your life is complete now, that you have nowhere left to go after that.
Where can you go? So I'm sure I've seen an announcement for the new Bond director, this guy called Cary Fukunaga. I think it sounds like a Japanese name, but I think he's an American. So they have announced that he will do it, but it has pushed the whole thing back until I'm not even sure if it's next year. It might be the year after. It's been a bit of a saga. Anyway, that's Johnny English. I think you'll get the idea that neither Steve or I are chomping at the bit with our recommendations about that.
I think it says a lot when we'd rather just talk about James Bond. Pretty crushing.
All right, then. So let's move on.
I think we should.
Yes. So look, Steve, another film which does have a comedic aspect to it, but it's got a bit more going to it than the tired old James Bond parody, that's for sure. This is this film called A Simple Favor.
Yes.
Got some good actors in it. It's a sharp film. Yeah, by that I mean it's got a little bit of edge to it. It's wrapped. The story is kind of a mystery thriller type. It's almost a Hitchcock type story, I thought.
In a way, yes.
In a way, but with a comedic element. Would you care to just perhaps give us a bit of a sense of what's going on in the story for a start, and we can dissect it after that?
It's called A Simple Favor, and it's got Anna Kendrick playing a young, bubbly, innocent single mother who is trying to keep her mind sane by doing a little, she's doing a vlog, they call it. She's doing, you know,
yes.
She's, I mean, what kind of person seriously tries to maintain their sanity by broadcasting to strangers? What a bizarre way to carry on, that must
well,
be.
Isn't that ridiculous? Who would do such a thing? I can't think of anyone.
So she's clearly a deeply troubled individual. But anyway, she's also very lonely. So she's delighted when one of the other mothers at her child's primary school, played by Blake Lively, decides that she wants to be her mate. And that they're a very, very odd couple, these two, because, I say, Kendrick's character is very innocent, very sweet, complete ingenue, and Blake Lively's character is edgy and drinks martinis all through the day and has an enormous... portraits of her pubic hair on her wall in her living room.
Yes.
She's married to a world famous author and listens to 1970s French pop. So,
yes.
So you've got this enormous contrast, and obviously, it's meant to be quite obvious that these two do not belong together as friends. It's quite clear. And some of the cattier members of the school run do comment that the one is basically being the unpaid nanny for the other.
Yeah.
Suddenly, Blake Lively's character says, "Can you pick my little nipper up for school this afternoon?" Kendrick does so, and then Lively disappears.
Yes.
And the film then follows the fallout from that. And if you've seen the trailer you can kind of have a sense of where the film is likely to be going. Mm. Parallels are being drawn with things like Gone Girl.
Yeah,
I don't think it's entirely fair.
Mm.
Like you say, there is Hitchcock going on in it, but there's also what I really liked, and I think this is where you and I are going to part company. I think, Simon, the story's quite neat and intricate, and it's got that decent thing of there is a twist which obviously we won't mention, but I do remember thinking to myself, oh, I bet I know how that's all explained away. Yeah, okay, I figured that bit out. But I didn't get everything. It was fun. But it's the interplay between Kendrick and Lively which makes this film for me.
Okay.
I thought Lively in particular is, dare I say it, she's lively.
Yeah.
She's absolutely fantastic. She's clearly having massive, massive fun doing this film.
Yeah.
And I thought that the way she inhabited that character was superb. I really, really enjoyed the interplay between the pair of them. Kendrick gets more and more barbed as she goes on, as she starts to sort of come out of herself, inspired clearly by Kendrick's character. And it worked for me. That's all I can really tell you is I was really, really impressed.
Okay. Well, some of what you said I totally agree with. For me, Blake Lively was the best part of the film by a country mile. You're right. She inhabited this sort of edgy character, someone who pushes the boundaries, who doesn't care what others think of her, dresses sexily, provocatively, apparently has a really high-powered job, and as you say, likes the drink. Is quite happy to engage in sexual banter with her friend, her girlfriend. And so I think her character, she sparked completely, and I agree with you, that was really the best part of the film. And I get what you're saying about the fact that there's the two characters, her character and Anna Kendrick's character, are so different that gives you a really good byplay. So I wouldn't disagree with that. I found... though the type of character that Anna Kendrick plays, this woman called Stephanie, that sort of, as you just said, sort of innocent, bubbly ingenue.
Yes.
Who's always trying to please and say sorry all the time. I just find that personally, and this is about personal taste, a very unappealing character. But to me, I just don't like that character. I mean, you see that sort of character depicted in many films and stories. So I know Anna Kendrick's got a pretty good reputation, but I wasn't drawn to that character. I didn't feel like I was on that character's side particularly much. That might be just me. I felt that the third party in the triangle, Henry Golding, who we saw in Crazy Rich Asians not that long ago, Steve, was pretty much like he was in Crazy Rich Asians. He's got a little bit more going on than that film, but I think Henry is Henry, I think. And I thought he was a little on the bland side, to be fair.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was very incidental, really, to the plot.
But yeah,
the whole thing revolves around, I think, the relationship between the two women. And if that's not working for you, this film will fall flat.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what's happening in the film, without giving too much away, but as you rightly say, Steve, the Anna Kendrick's character grows and evolves as the film proceeds, and for a while Blake Lively's character takes a step out of proceedings to return later, but when she returns things are different. And the sort of spark and frisson that I enjoyed in the early part of the film I felt wasn't quite there later on.
I know what you mean. Yeah. And if you watch the film, you'll see why that is the case.
Yeah, there is a reason for it. Yeah. But there's one other thing I would say about it, and you're going to accuse me of being utterly pedantic here, but putting it on the table. Yes, I know. Look, any film, right, any story, it can be as stupid or ridiculous as you like. The premise can be unbelievable. That's all fine, as long as you're drawn into the story and you believe it and so forth. But I think films or stories have to have a certain internal logic so that...
Oh, they do, definitely.
You know, you've got to feel like, yeah, that things sort of make sense within what's going on. And there was one part of this film that later on really struck me, and it got me feeling a bit frustrated. And I think I can talk about it without giving too much away.
Here's what we can do.
Yeah.
You tell me what it is.
Yes.
I will edit it out from the podcast...
Right,
and then we can talk about the thing.
Okay, all right. So I think we can get away with it. So as you rightly say, it's about Blake Lively's character. She plays a woman called Emily Nelson, and she's quite a larger than life character when we first meet her. That's fair to say.
She's out there.
All the other parents at the school, the primary school, are very aware of her. You can't help but notice her. She drives a flash car. She dresses like $1 million. She's just a strikingly beautiful woman, and she's eminently noticeable. But it's an important part of the film when reasonably early on we understand she doesn't want to be recognized.
Yes.
And those two things just don't sit next to each other. If someone doesn't want to be recognized, they don't carry on and dress and behave in the way that she is doing. And that thought struck me and it bothered me, particularly later on when we find out why.
Yeah.
Out the backstory.
I don't think you've given anything away there. I don't think that's even remotely spoilery. So I'm gonna make an editorial decision right now and leave that in, because I think you danced around that definitely.
Good.
And it is hinted up quite early in the film. I was swept along enough that never hit me.
Okay, well, that's the key to it, isn't it? That's the key to a good story. If you are swept along enough so that if there is a little something that you might perhaps bother you, you're not going to care because you're so enjoying the film.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it just kind of flicked a little switch in my brain and, excuse me, it did bother me a bit. That might be me just being a bit of a pedant, but no,
I can see if that suddenly gets hold of you, it's going to worry away at you, and you're not going to be able to let go of it.
Unfortunately,
I thought there was so much else going on. There was enough style and enough spark, especially as until Blake Lively's character steps out of the story for a wee while. In particular, there's enough going on that I was taken. I mean, it's not just that you've also got some interesting little supporting vignettes going in the background. There's a detective who keeps sort of gnawing away at the disappearance of Lively's character, Emily. Sergeant Malloy, played by Andrew Moody, I thought was just absolutely lovely. Just every now and then he just come in and just ask the most barbed questions.
Yeah.
And then step back again. It was very, very subtly done. I really enjoyed him. You've got what's his name? Rupert Friend.
Yes.
Not much more than a cameo, but it's a very, very acid little turn that he does as Emily's boss, Dennis Nylon. And I thought that was really enjoyable. I felt there was enough momentum in it to just keep me going. And it sounds like it didn't quite do that for you.
Not quite. But you know what? Having made that little criticism of the writing of Blake Lively's character, I have to say, especially in that first half of the film, I thought her performance was really good. I mean, I think it's one of the most interesting characters I've seen in recent times, just because she's sort of that sort of devil may care, push the boundaries,
Yes.
don't give a toss what other people think. That was a very, very engaging performance. And it was, as I said at the beginning, for me to stand out in the film. I think she's a pretty talented performer, actually. And
Yes.
I saw her in another film a year or two back, Steve. It was one of those shark movies.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Yeah, and she was pretty good in that. And I would, yeah, I yeah, that was an out and out thriller. And I'd recommend you see that if you enjoyed her performance in this film. So yeah, I'm not going to diss the whole film. I did have some issues with it, but you're right. I think I excuse me. There is a lot, quite a bit going on there. Didn't hit all the marks for me, but yeah, that's okay.
You're a cold-hearted man, Mercer. What can I tell
Oh,
you?
I am. Okay. Yeah,
Yeah.
there you go.
Such is life.
Steve, we've actually got another film we should just mention before we get on to some music a bit later. This is one I haven't seen, but I've heard of the director, Bruce Beresford, because I know he directed a very well-known and popular film called Driving Miss Daisy a few years
Yes,
back, and
yes.
he's now come up with a film set in Australia called Ladies in Black, and you have seen it, and I think you've rather enjoyed it.
It's an interesting film. It's never going to be on the same scale as Driving Miss Daisy, which, if I remember correctly, was got Oscar buzz, didn't it? It
Is
was.
that Morgan? It's Morgan Freeman, wasn't it?
That's
Did he
the
get?
one. So, it was a big deal. This is going to be much more provincial. It's set in Sydney, in I think the 1950s, and it's the story of four or five women who work at a department store called Goods in Sydney in, as I say, the 1950s. And so they dress in black dresses every day to go out on the sales floor, hence the name. And there's a few characters in particular that it sort of revolves around. There's Magda, played by Julia Ormond, who, again, just like Blake Lively was in A Simple Favour, is clearly having a great time putting as much tartness and acerbic sneer into the character as she can, but in this particular case, there's no ulterior motive. She's actually genuinely trying, in her own confused way, to do good, to try and help. For example, Lisa, played by I don't know, is it Anguri Anjuri? I think it's Anguri Rice, who is 17-year-old girl who is basically filling time, working there over Christmas until she gets her exam results, and if dad'll let her, go off to university. And then you've got other of these women are having problems with husbands or looking for husbands, and so Magna does a bit to try and hook one of them up with one of her attractive single friends, who, like her, is from somewhere slightly non-specified in Eastern Europe. And the whole thing is, well, it's nice. It's not brilliant, it's not appalling, it's extremely agreeable. It's a very, very pleasant film. It's like we said before about Johnny English, it's not a film you can ever take offense at, but it does actually have a bit more substance. The characters are simply drawn, but they are drawn. They're distinctive, they're individual, they're sweet, they're very engaging. Like I said, the film itself revolves around Magda, middle-aged. Sort of, is she Hungarian or Croatian or one of those things? She's somewhere down there. It's a little bit non-specific, but probably Croatian. And she's, she's a bit of a matriarch, sort of a self-anointed matriarch, but she's her heart's in the right place. And she's just really sweet. It's like I say, it's not got Morgan Freeman in it. It's not going to trouble the Oscars, but it will be a very, very agreeable way of spending a Sunday afternoon. It's nice.
Oh, good. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, you know.
Oh no, that was not a compl that was not a complaint at all. I
Yeah,
mean,
no. I mean, is
I realize
that
it sounded like damning with faint praise. I get
yeah,
that, but it
no,
was
but that's
not my
okay.
intention. No, it's lovely. It genuinely
I
is.
did see just one thing on it, Steve. I recall seeing a little bit about it in the suggesting that in the writing of the film, you know, there might have been an opportunity to make a slightly sharper social commentary on what was going on in Australia at the time with immigrants coming in and the like, but the film decides not to be to take a little bit of more of a biting line when the opportunity might have been there, which fits in with what you're saying, yes, I guess, of the gentleness of it.
It's not that film. Yeah, gentle's a good word for it. I mean, they obviously, you know, they do refer, as you say in the trailer, to these people being refos.
Right.
And then that's then explained as refugees, which is then explained as immigrants.
Right.
But the refos are central characters in the film. They're absolutely pivotal to the film, and they're depicted very, very sympathetically. So if there is a social justice point being made, it's done in a very nicely understated way, which I actually quite liked.
Well, I was just about to say, that's probably the best way to do something like this, rather than hit you over the head with some sort of piece of blatant propaganda, gently slipping it through that actually, you know, these are interesting people in their own right, and they've got interesting stories to tell. Is quite a nice way of doing it.
And absolutely. That fact is utterly unremarkable.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, good. They're human. Who knew?
Well said, Mr. McKay. Very good. Well, on the basis of that, if I have got a spare Sunday afternoon coming up and it's still on,
yeah,
I might have a look at it.
Yeah, I mean, that's about the level of impact it's going to make, is you might as well give it a look. It's not going to change your life. It's not got the social impact of a Black Klansman. It's not got the sparkling wit of A Simple Favor. It's none of those. It's just a very, very pleasant film.
Good. Very good. Excellent. So that's Ladies in Black.
That's the one.
Right. Now, we should put movies to one side for a bit.
I think we should. And I think it's time to have a look at music. Now, I know we're supposed to be sympathetic to foreigners, but Australians? Yeah, we'll allow them as people as well. Because in particular, you've been talking to one, haven't you?
Yeah, Steve, we're talking about an Australian rock band. Look, to be honest with you, a band I was not familiar with. They're called Dead Letter Circus, and they sound like this.
Come on, you're not this forgiven. Here for the living. Have you ever seen my face? Have you ever seen this place with your own eyes? Hey, you there, show me the real.
Yeah, they hail from Brisbane, and they've been around for several years. They put out, just about to put up their fifth album, which is cunningly called Dead Letter Circus. That's the band's name as well. And their front man, a guy called Kim Benzie, has just been here to promote this latest album. Before we hear from him, Steve, I mean, as I say, I'm just a bit ignorant here. Had you heard of Dead Letter Circus?
No, I hadn't, but actually I've been listening to them a little bit, and I'm kind of glad I had.
Oh, there you are. Yeah, I suppose they've been labelled, and labels are very tricky, but they've been labelled, I guess, a progressive rock band.
Well, definitely, it's modern rock, really.
Modern rock. It's not a sweet melodic rock. It's a bit more edgy than that. So
it's like somewhere between Genesis and Sheehad.
It's a good string way to put it.
I mean, I realise there's a hell of a lot of room between those two.
But
they're on that continuum.
Now, look, the full interview is on our website, cravepodcast.com. So we won't play the whole thing now. But Kim is an interesting guy. He's got quite a lot to talk about. And to begin with, the whole issue of the name Dead Letter Circus really struck me. And so I did ask him, where the heck does that name come from?
Yeah. Dead Letter Circus.
Yeah.
For Kiwis who haven't caught up with you, where does that name come from?
A secret. Oh. Yeah. We don't talk about it.
Oh, okay. Well, forgive me for asking, but let's put it this way. It's a really interesting name.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you hear lots of names of bands, and I can't think of another thing to say is there's no immediate idea that pops into my head about where that's coming from.
Well, the only clue is right now we are in the circus. We're all big fans of The Matrix.
Okay. That's fair enough. The circus of life is where we are right now.
Yeah, we're in the game.
Yeah.
This is, we're plugged in. We're in the Matrix. And so that's as much as I can say. I've probably actually broken protocol by taking you that deep.
Oh well. Where did music come into your life at a very early age, or a bit later? How is it that I'm sitting here talking to an Australian guy who's a full time musician? Yeah, you are. So where this great journey of yours start? Young or not?
I had a really young mum. So mum was like 17,
mm-hmm.
and so I grew up in like share houses of. Like my first memories are sitting in front of, we got a show called Rage. It's like a music video show,
mm-hmm.
on the ABC. And we also lived in the country, so there's only two television stations. So some of my earliest memories are being, because I get up early, and their parents, if you've got an 18-year-old mum, she's get a treat. If you have a 30-year-old mum, she's going to get up and start making your pancakes and do shit. But if you've got an 18-year-old mum who's, you know, trying to have relationships with dudes, you know, and lead a normal young person's life.
Yes, you know, yes.
With a toll on kid,
yeah.
Inevitably getting stuck in front of the TV or something's probably going to happen.
Yep.
And so the only thing that would ever be on was this music videos. And so I think sometimes I hear songs from that era as well, and I go, fuck, that is all through my melodies. Mm. And like I go, I don't listen to that in my private life, but I was programmed with it when I was a kid. So like she loved Led Zeppelin and all the 80s music, you know, like all those 80s. Ice House and
yeah,
like, and if you did some kind of spectral analysis of how we do our choruses and stuff and our vocal melodies, it feels like it's from that age a little bit, like kind of influenced but in a modern shell.
Yeah.
So I feel like that, and then I don't know.
Was it the singing or playing an instrument that was the first thing that you sort of dabbled with?
I didn't discover music till I was like 17.
Okay.
And so I was kind of a bit of a troubled teenager, I guess. I felt like the mode of the version of happiness that you're sort of given to subscribe to, being like in Australia anyway, it's like get an apprenticeship, go to university, whatever. And I was like, fuck, that all sounds terrible. I don't want to do any of that. And but rather than go feeling like that was unworthy of me, I felt unworthy of it. So thus I was like, you know, kind of a depressive teenager, and I was like pretty dark, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was a lot like I had friends and stuff, but I'd spend a lot of that time a bit sort of depressed. And then obviously the inevitable path for someone like that is to discover drugs or something like that, which, you know, I went from being a junior sports star. So I was like an 800 meter runner when I was 14,
mm-hmm.
Did a 4-minute mile when I was 13.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So like, you know, goals of going to the Olympics, that kind of stuff. And then very quickly through one night of partying, like out of the blue, my entire life changed into this war. Okay.
Mm.
You know, it shifted me into that,
yeah,
the journey of the mind, I guess. And then I still was like, you know, could never really, had no drive, nothing, until one night, I was at 17, I was at a party and someone was playing a riff on a guitar, and I was like, and they played a song I liked. I was like, fuck, is that how you make music? Like, man, show me how to do that.
Yes.
And this dude showed me how to play a Slayer riff. And I was like sitting there trying to get my fingers to work. Anyway, I spent all night till the sun came up just trying to play this one riff, annoying the fuck out of everyone at the party trying to sleep. And I called him like 3 days later. I said, dude, I need another riff. He goes, what do you mean? I went, yeah, at the party, you showed me the riff. And he's like, oh, okay, I don't really remember, but sure. And then he showed me another riff, and I was like, dude. And then I called him like 2 days later. I said, dude, I need another one. Said, I've probably got 3 more riffs, and that's it. And I said, man, do you know anyone else who plays guitar? He goes, dude, I'll introduce you to the old man. He plays guitar. And I was like, sick. And then sort of, you know, what I finally got, if I'm being a hippie and I think about it, I remember how it made me feel. So I think I got my first feeling of unconditional happiness through my activities,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Because prior to that, my ultimate form of happiness would have felt was hanging out with my family. And then that's obviously a closed bubble where you just feel like you feel, and that's natural, it's love, and it's unconditional love. And then when you go and, if you don't know what you want to do with your life, and you go into the world and you go, fuck, all right, let's try woodwork, let's try whatever, let's try fucking working at a soup kitchen, all those, you know.
Yes.
And which that one would probably be something that would make me happy, you know, giving something to people. I never tried that, but.
probably would.
Yeah. But anyway, and then it was my first moment of like, I was like going, like I felt it in my body. My body was humming. I remember going, like trying to talk to one of my bogan mates, because I grew in the country, right? So he's sitting there going, dude, I feel like when I play guitar that my fucking, I've got this epic warm feeling in my chest. It was like, well, settle down, mate. And which is exactly what, like, that's the kind of shit I would talk about. And and in a small country town, it's kind of a weird thing to do, you know what I mean? They're like, mate, he's all right. And you're probably a bit of a, he's a bit fucking man. But for me, that was a really real physical sensation. I was like, wow. And then later in life, I could recognize it as it was, I was fed emotionally by something that wasn't my family.
Yeah.
And I found a purpose. And so I never really looked back from there. Like, to my mum's horror, I remember, I think I must have been 16 when I started playing guitar, because I had an older girlfriend and she finished school in year 11. And mum said, okay, what subjects are we going to do next year for year 12? And I was like, mum, I've got a plan, right? I'm going to go on the dole and become a musician. And her, oh, I just spat on your phone. And her,
don't worry.
Her actual, like, if it's still remember her face, it's like she just jolted. And literally, before I could do, like, the next day, because she worked that TAFE, all right? Do you have TAFE here?
Yeah, I know it's like polytech type sort of stuff.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's not uni. It's like, don't you need to go to uni again? Yeah. Anyway, the next day, I was enrolled in a horticulture class by my mum, who waited at the table. I was like, mum, I didn't give a fuck about gardening. And she said, oh, you're not going on the dole. You're not going to the museum. I was like, and so I don't, you know, obviously it was a far-fetched dream back then, but I do bring it up on occasional family dinners.
Yes, okay, yes.
So mum, remember when I told you I want to be in a band?
Yes.
And then,
what does she say now?
Oh, she just, you know, probably craps on that she planned it.
Yeah.
Because our age gap's pretty, you know, obviously.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's small as well. So
yeah.
She's more like a cool auntie than a doting mother figure.
So there we go. Kim Benzie, got a good tale to tell. The band, again, is called Dead Letter Circus. That's the name of their new album. And as he says, it looks like they're intending to tour here in the new year, perhaps February. So I think they'd probably put on a pretty decent show. On their website, Steve, I put some links to some of their couple of videos from their new album.
Excellent.
It looks like they're a pretty decent, hard-rocking band if they're to watch them live. So they're probably worth a good look when they come over in 2019. Speaking of tours, anything else to mention that's coming up?
There's three or four, actually, that are worth mentioning.
Okay.
There's another Australian, John Farnham, is coming over.
Okay, the voice.
The very fella, yes. And he's going to be at Villa Maria Winery.
Okay.
In March, Saturday the 9th. So you can have a glass of wine while you watch him.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been to a concert there?
I haven't. No, but I know lots of people have, and I'm beginning to think I'm missing out, and I should at least go once to see what all the fuss is about.
It's a nice venue. You'll be sitting on the grass. It's quite pleasant. Yeah. The wine is not as affordable as you would expect coming from source.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's a nice little venue, so it's worth a look. So that's John Farnham with Op Shop and the Miltones opening for him.
Right.
What else have we got? Billy Bragg. That's an interesting little thing that he's doing. He's doing, they're calling it a trilogy of concerts.
Okay.
And it's an interesting thing that he's doing. He's doing, where are we looking? I've got the details here, yeah? He's playing a little venue called the Hollywood in Avondale in Auckland.
Right.
And on Wednesday the 21st of November, he's doing just a current set of what he plays.
Yeah.
On Thursday the 22nd, he's doing songs from his first three albums.
Okay.
And then on Friday the 23rd, he's doing songs from his second three albums.
For goodness sake.
So
it's interesting.
So like I said, they're calling it a trilogy of shows, and it's an unusual way of doing it. I think the idea is that you know, that the hardcore fans will buy tickets for all three.
Yeah. I don't know. How big is he in the UK, do you think, Steve? He was very big at one time, wasn't he?
Oh, back in the 80s, yeah. He was enormously political, obviously. You know, he was very much a protest singer.
Yeah.
And the British Labour Party embraced him, and he was part of a sort of a touring political festival called Red Wedge, and he was quite a big thing, and I think these days, I mean, to be perfectly honest, the sense I get is he's now just sort of like a national heritage thing. He's just part of our background. He's not really an essential force any longer, but he ain't going nowhere either.
And
those who are fans are very, very keen fans. So when I put this on our Twitter feed, Crave Podcast, we did get a few people saying, oh no, why is he only playing Auckland? I said, I can't answer that. I said, well, I guess I'll have to come for all three shows then.
So he's got some, yeah, he's got a diaspora going.
He has indeed, and obviously, you know, charging for three separate tickets, obviously, you know, he's very socialist of him.
Exactly, we
shan't discuss the politics of him playing these three shows, but yeah, it's an interesting approach. So I'm sure we'll be there for one of those least. We've got at the other end of the spectrum,
yes,
Ozzy Osbourne.
Yes.
So he's coming to Horncastle Arena in Christchurch on Wednesday, the 13th of March.
Right.
And then the following Saturday, the 16th of March, he's going to be up here at Spark Arena. And this is No More Tours 2.
What a great title.
Exactly. Irony is not dead. And then after that...
He must be... one of those guys who's probably in their 70s by now, I would have thought.
I would imagine so. Yes, they're in the 70s. If only there were a way of finding these things out.
We're gonna
look him up even as we speak. Fill in, Simon, while I type things into Wikipedia.
Well, I was just gonna say. I mean, it's just I shouldn't really make such a remark because so many bands of many different generations are realizing the way to make money is not by putting out new records, it's by getting on the road and touring. That's how musicians make their money these days. That's as Kim Benzie was saying in that interview a little earlier, that's just the way of it. And so if you can, why not? If people want to see it, why not?
Well, to answer your question, he's 69.
Only 69?
Yeah, he's a youngster. I mean, frankly, it's a miracle he's made 69, to be perfectly honest.
Probably.
And he's got Judas Priest supporting him.
Could be a
decent. I mean, I don't know how good he's going to be. I'm sure he'll put on a decent show. He's never been the best singer in the world.
No. It's more about the presence and the swag and the
exactly the
swagger. Yeah.
So we shall see. Now, if there's nothing there that pleases you, then there's got to be. We finally got the official lineup for Laneway.
And if you can't find
something that you like there, then frankly, you're not trying hard enough.
Well, I noticed then you've got this on our website, Stephen. You've got there's a pretty big headline act and Florence and the Machine.
That's going to be quite impressive, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone is enough to get me there.
Mm, yeah, likewise.
Yeah. So we will try and get ourselves into that one. It was a great day out last year. They have a fantastic venue in Albert Park in Auckland. It's a great place to do it, right by the university.
Right.
Lot of shade, lots of grass. It's a very comfortable place to be. I really enjoyed my day out, and the music obviously is the key to it all, and the music's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is a great day out.
Yeah, fantastic.
And we are the kickoff for the Laneway tour. It moves over to Brisbane and Sydney and other places that we have less interest in very shortly after that. But yeah, that's where they're going to kick off, and that's going to be quite brilliant. And the date of that, just so that everyone knows, is Monday the 28th of January, Auckland Anniversary Day.
Lovely. And just one last thought. I haven't heard, but have you, Steve, heard from anyone, because we mentioned this last time, have anyone who went to see Cher?
I have spoken to one or two people.
Right.
Who tell me that it was really quite an impressive show.
Good.
Yeah.
Lots of glitz and glamour, without doubt.
Absolutely. That's what I was hearing, yes. I mean, obviously, you know, we weren't in attendance.
Sadly not, but never mind. But, well, the thing that I would have been most interested to hear was just how good her voice sounded, I think. Because I remember you and I having a discussion about the Mamma Mia movie and wondering how supported her voice was technically in that film. And
do you know, here's the funny thing. People talk all about the show. Do you know the one thing that nobody ever mentioned?
What?
The voice.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's almost like they didn't want to talk about it.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
It is. Now, there is one other show that we need to mention.
And I don't
know how to mention it. This is the problem.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Childish Gambino?
Yes, Childish Gambino. I've forgotten the other alias of Childish Gambino, but put out, and not that long ago, an incredibly provocative and video of I forgot the name of the song off the top of my head now, but
What is America? Or This is America.
What is America? And he's in a car park, underground car park, and there's mayhem going on around him, and it's a very, very strong piece of art. And in fact, the actor was in the Star Wars Han Solo film.
Yeah, Donald Glover.
Donald Glover, thank you. There, I was off the top of my head. I was struggling, showing my years. But yeah, no. So I'm aware of Childish Gambino, to answer your question. Yeah. Yes.
So he's doing an event,
right?
Called Pharos.
Oh.
And there's very, very, very few of this event have actually happened yet, but he's bringing it to Auckland, and it's going to be somewhere. I forget the name of the venue. But he's going to be in a park out kind of Hunua Ranges kind of way, southeast of Auckland.
Right.
It's going to be over 3 nights. Additional details say experience new music, live dome performance each night featuring special guests. Wow. It sounds like it's going to be quite a remarkable... I think experience is the word we're looking for here. This is not simply going to be some bloke hops on a stage and sings a few songs.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that kind of concert. I have a feeling...
Why? That's very intriguing.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely playing his cards very close to his chest at the moment. It does sound...
And when's that coming up, Steve?
That is going to be... Oh, I've lost it. I had it right in front of me just a second or two ago. It's going to be... Oh, where's it gone on my computer screen? I had it, though. There you go. Friday the 23rd until Sunday the 25th of November.
Oh, not that far away at all, really.
Not that far away at all, no.
Oh, I think that, of course, you know, given the... here we are. Yes, I see where you've got it here. Gosh, I think that's something we should try and attend, don't you?
I think we need to be... We will get coverage of this one way or another.
Yes, excellent. Okay, well, look, that's some interesting...
Whether it's us or our intrepid guest reviewers... Or a combination of all of those things. We will be covering this one way or another.
Yeah, he would be a fascinating chap to see live. Okay, fantastic. Steve, thank you. And thank you for listening to our podcast. It's called Crave. We're always very happy to hear from you. If you want to get in touch, you can drop us a line by email at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Crave Podcast.
We are. So I'm Simon Mercep.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Outstanding.